Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Warren, Michigan, earned a BA in criminal justice from Michigan State University, and an MBA from the University of Michigan. Since 2018, he's been the CEO and founder of Circadian Risk, Inc., which is a risk analytics company with the aim to reduce the risk of a physical incident. They provide a suite of tools aimed at assessing and improving physical security slash risks for enterprise companies. His name? Michael Martin. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible, and we're with Michael Martin. Since 2018, he's been the CEO and founder of Circadian Risk, Inc. Michael, welcome. An honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's a great pleasure to be here in my hometown of Detroit.
Can we start by talking about hometown, your childhood, and your mom and your dad?
Sure. Grew up in the city of Warren. I guess technically my birth certificate says I was born in Grosse Pointe. That's because I was born at Bon Secours Hospital. But we lived in, my parents both grew up in Detroit, and my dad got a job with the city of Warren, so we moved to Warren in 1960. I was born in 1970. My dad was a maintenance person for the city of Warren, and my mom worked kind of as a server for Kmart Corporation and delivered Meals on Wheels in the community. So very active family in the area. Grew up a fan of all Detroit sports. As difficult as it is right now, I'm a fan of all the sports here in Detroit.
What's the biggest thing, Michael, you learned from Dad, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Mom?
I think we had talked previously, and I think the big lesson was, you know, when you grow up not having everything, you try to buy things that are quality and that are going to last. So the lesson that came through, and I think you had a similar experience, too poor to buy cheap, right? And you wanted to look at, you know, what was going to last because you couldn't afford to keep buying and buying. You had to buy something that was going to last. And I think those lessons carried through to my work life, you know, in that when I'm talking to customers about what they need to do, it's, you know, you can't afford to go cheap. We're talking about protecting, in cases of organizations, your employees and your customers. In the case of schools, our children.
We didn't buy often, but when we did buy, we bought quality. All right. Where did your interest in security management come from?
It probably came at an early age. My first job was with the city of Warren Pools, and I was a lifeguard. I was on the swim team at Warren Woods, and they were going through and looking for people to be lifeguards. So I went through the training, got trained, and so at a very young age was in a position of protecting the public. And I think that kind of mindset about, you know, people are there to enjoy themselves and have a good time, but at any moment, you know, tragedy can strike and you need to be prepared for it. So I think at, you know, very early age, 14, 15 is when I started working there. You know, I had that mindset, what am I going to do to protect everybody if a scenario plays out where they're not going to be protected? And sometimes that was going in and saving somebody that wasn't a strong swimmer. And other times it was, you know, fights that broke out, you know, between two groups that, you know, visiting the pool that day.
We're talking to Michael Martin. Michael, how did you ever get into the security business?
So I had originally wanted to go to federal law enforcement. And so I was in my studies at Michigan State University, and I was going through the criminal justice program there at Michigan State. And there was a lot of opportunities within the law enforcement area that they were, you know, saying that if you had a degree from Michigan State, they had police process, they had corrections, they had parole systems and that. And they had a new one, which was security. And security was probably, at the time, the least appealing, you know, because I kind of wanted to go federal law enforcement at that time. And security was kind of like, you know, kind of thought about, you know, these are the people in buildings protecting it, you know, second tier to law enforcement is kind of the mindset. And that was kind of the late 80s. And that was kind of not where I wanted to go. So I had a focus on both criminal justice and computer science. And so I kind of had these kind of two worlds and two passions developing at that time. But what happened was, as I went through the curriculum, as I went through the security focus, I was like, there's a lot of opportunity in the security realm because it's such – and at that time, it was a new curriculum for Michigan State, but it was also a new way of looking at it. And I kind of thought, hey, I can be on the cutting edge of changing people's mindset about security. You know, in the late 80s, it kind of had that rent-a-cop mentality, you know, a second tier to law enforcement. And then there were kind of things that drove that, right? You know, as – I graduated in 1992. I had a lot of good mentors. I had one from Smith Industries and Aerospace that helped me along the way and, you know, kind of foster that, hey, why don't you look at that computer science experience and seeing how you could do it and help a corporation, you know, look at threats from maybe a security and a IT perspective. And so that kind of appealed to me. Also at the time, when you're thinking 1992, when I came back from my overseas study program in England, we had 1992 post Gulf War. You had the military, you know, having reduction in force. You had most of the three-letter law enforcement agencies saying you needed 5 years of experience to go in and be able to even be considered for a job there. And so I was kind of left at, you know, did I want to spend, you know, where did I want to spend that 5 years? Getting that experience that I needed to get into these agencies. And there was a company, a security company that recruited on campus called GuardsMark. And GuardsMark came in and they kind of had a different, you know, I said that, you know, the main thrust of the security, the contract security at that time was this rent-a-cop mentality. And GuardsMark kind of approached it from a different area. They were, you know, I was interviewed by a former Secret Service agent. They claimed at the time that they had, and they were right, they were the largest employer of ex-federal agents anywhere. And so I was like, okay, here's a place that I can go and get experience, and I'd rather spend my 5 years doing this rather than in some small police department, you know, doing patrolling. And I figured, and this would also allow me to work on both my security passion and my computer science passion.
We're talking to Michael Martin, and that was 30 years ago, 1992. He was hired by GuardsMark as an hourly training supervisor. It's come a long, long way. And I'm Jack Russell, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula. We're with Michael Martin, the founder and CEO of Circadian Risk, Inc. Michael, you spent 23 years with GuardsMart, 1992 to 2015. Talk about that chapter in your life.
It was an incredible chapter because, like I explained, it was not my first choice to get into private security, especially contract security. But I felt it was offering something that the other places that I interviewed and the research that I had done weren't offering, and that was a career path. And so, you know, I applied, I think, for management positions, and, you know, they came back and said, you know, we have a training supervisor, an hourly position for you. And not too proud to accept it because that I had other offers, but it just seemed like they weren't the right companies. And so I figured, okay, this is a place that I can, you know, do and learn on the job. And, you know, kind of get that 5 years experience that everyone was saying that I needed. And so I accepted that job. It was at a time when, talk about local companies here for a second, when Comerica and Manufacturers Bank were merging. And Manufacturers had the traditional proprietary force where you were a Manufacturers Bank employee as a security officer. And Comerica Bank had used GuardsMark. And so this transition was going to be where GuardsMark was going to come in with Comerica and replace the proprietary force at Manufacturers Bank. So there's always kind of a conflict when that happens because you have those employees that have been around a long time. People knew them. They were employees of the bank. And then you had what was kind of regarded as the second tier, but they hadn't known GuardsMark yet. And so we were in the process of replacing close to 100 private security officers for Manufacturers Bank into the one group together as Comerica Bank. And so I was charged first at the Renaissance Center, Tower 100, where Comerica was located, converting that force over. and then at 411 West Lafayette. And I did the trainer's job for about 6 months. And 6 months in, the person that was the guard force, the uniform guard force manager at Comerica Bank for Guardsmark had left. And so I took that role in an interim capacity. And probably about 3-4 months in, as they were interviewing other people for that management job, the director of security at the time for Comerica, you know, was in a meeting with the Guardsmark official saying, you know, hey, what are you doing about, you know, it's been 3-4 months, you haven't filled this position, what are you doing about it? And they went through the candidates that they had, and the director of security at the time, a gentleman by the name of Bob Rayner, said, you know, the answer is sitting right here in this room. And he's been doing the job, you know, for 6 months as a trainer and 3 to 4 months actually sitting in the seat and doing it. So I think you have an easy, you know, an easy way here. Now, I had not even talked to them about taking that position and wasn't sure if that's what I wanted to do long term. And the response that came from our regional manager at the time was, yes, he'd be happy to accept that that job. And we spoke afterwards. They said, listen, we're going to make it worth your while. We'll get you the training you need to bring you up to speed as a manager. And so I went into that role at that time. And it was a couple years into that role as manager where I talked to that same director of security. And I said, you know, I'm thinking about going back to graduate school. And, you know, what would you recommend? And he said, well, what are you thinking about? And I said, well, could always get an advanced degree in criminal justice, right? And I said, I also had this computer science, you know, bent still. And he said, what's the most difficult thing for us to do here at the bank in regards to security? And I thought about it for a bit, and I said, I guess it's convincing the higher-ups about why you need to spend money on security. Because security is always kind of like a shakedown, right? Because you had a good year and nothing happened, and you go ask for another $1 million in the budget, and they say, what do you need that for? And your response is, so nothing happens next year, right? You know, and you kind of feel like you're in this constant shakedown thing. He goes, what I think would serve you the best is to go and get a business degree and learn how, with that security mindset and what is needed in security, to translate that so the people that control the purse strings and that need to understand that this is what's needed to do and the investment that's needed to make people safer need to happen. And he said, so I would suggest getting an MBA. And actually, that was great advice, and that's why you see the Michigan State University Criminal Justice and the Michigan MBA in there.
GuardSmart has a great reputation for decades, and it was led by a legendary man, Ira Littman. What made him so special?
I think it was, I'd never met an individual in my life before or since that was so driven every day on a daily basis. I kind of felt, and I likened it to, and I had this discussion with his son recently, that I think he woke up every day feeling he needed to prove himself, even though he had enough, you know, he could have rested on his laurels at any time, but every day he woke up and it was just a constant strive for excellence. He was tough. He was not for everybody. He was a very difficult person to deal with. But if you saw what was driving him and you knew what he was trying to get at the crux, that his whole kind of reason for getting into this was to make organizations safer and to drive that. And it would actually frustrate him when people weren't on that same page with him.
What's the biggest thing, Michael, you learned during your 23-year career with GuardSmart?
I think it's to question every deal, to not feel bad about saying, is this the right deal for us? And to understand what was going to drive, you know, those types of deals. And I think just the ability to go and be able to have that quality control on everything that you do. I think that was the main lesson. You know, nothing is too small to be taken seriously.
All right, let's go back 21 years. September 10th, 2001. GuardSmart moves its headquarters from Memphis, Tennessee to New York City. The next day, the world changes.
Yeah.
What do you remember?
Yeah, I mean, it was an exciting time. You know, we had been based in Memphis for a long time. It was very much, you know, we were regarded as the Southern company based in Memphis, and we had these plans to move to New York, and kind of the company was growing, the reputation was growing, and Mr. Lippman had this desire to be amongst the movers and shakers in New York City. That's where our customers, CEOs, were sitting. That's where we needed to be. We needed to be amongst it. So that was what was driving the decision. The fact that September 10th, that Monday, was our first day there was total excitement. And we all know in the next 24 hours what transpired. I remember, you asked what I remember about that day. I had a flight from Detroit Metro to Louisville scheduled. I was going down to my branch in Louisville. And just by happenstance, that flight got canceled. Didn't have anything to do with what was going on in New York. The flight just got canceled. So I was waiting for the next flight to go out, which was going to be like at 10:20. And I'm sitting there at the airport, and by now we're seeing, and if you remember, the first reports out were a commuter plane had hit, you know, and you couldn't tell from the outline exactly how big of a plane it was in that. And so there was some speculation, but people weren't thinking terrorism at that point. And I remember seeing a friend of mine that had worked security at, I think at the time it was still Northwest Airlines there in Detroit, not Delta yet. And he kind of had this look on his face, and he pulled me over and he said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "I'm getting ready to travel out to Louisville, and then I'm headed to New York later." He goes, "It's not going to happen." I go, "Oh, this commuter crash has it?" And he goes, "We're starting to get reports from United and other airlines that, you know, there's more to this." And just as we're having that conversation, we see the second plane hit the second tower. And that's when we all knew. I mean, my phone started ringing. You know, we at that time had some of the lead former FBI agents that had worked counterintelligence that were working for Guardsmark at that time. And to go back just 1 month, we were sitting around saying, you know, there's a lot of chatter that people are hearing. What do you think is going to happen? We had kind of a roundtable on that very session 1 month prior to 9/11. Of course, nobody predicted what actually happened, but, you know, people thought there would be an attack in the homeland, that it would be in New York. You know, so there was a lot of discussion about that at the time. The main thing that we focused on was where were our employees and were they safe? And then where were our customers and were they safe? And we did a lot of, you know, we had a lot of business in the Twin Towers at that time. And over the next several months, you know, we had to deal with them being relocated. And just the company stepping up during that time is what I remember most.
We're talking to Michael Martin. If you want to learn more, www.circadianrisk.com. There's been a couple of defining moments that have transformed this country. One was 9/11. Another one was Columbine High School. When we come back, we're going to ask them about Columbine. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything's Possible. I'm Jack Rasula with Michael Martin, the CEO and founder of Circadian Risk. April 20th, 1999. A little school outside Denver, Colorado, Columbine.
Yeah, and you talk about defining moments in either law enforcement or security, and this is certainly one of them. Because what people would find very difficult to understand today, and we that were around know this, prior to Columbine is when we would hear, "Oh, we never thought it would happen here." There'd be these sporadic incidences, and people would say, "Oh, this was a quiet little hamlet. We never thought it would happen here." Columbine kind of lifted the veil on what was going on in our public school systems at the time, that there were disaffected, you know, this term disaffected youth that were out there, that were kind of on the fringes. And it kind of exposed it because everyone was like, you know, Littleton, Colorado, what is going on there? And people started having the discussion after that, hey, this can happen anywhere, that it's not just, you know, an inner city problem. It's not something that is unique to those types of places that have been exposed to violence in the past. It could happen anywhere. And that was kind of the time, the first major incident where I said, okay, we're finally going to get security taken seriously, and people are going to open up a discussion, and people are going to say, what do we need to do to protect our children? And people will stop saying, and I said this naively at the time, that, you know, I don't want to be aware of my risk, you know, and people are going to take this seriously. And it just seemed like, you know, that was going to be such a defining moment. And I say naively because as early as 6 months ago, I heard somebody say, you know, hey, I don't want to do a risk assessment because that'll put me on notice that I have liability and I don't really want that. And, you know, I thought I heard the last of that, not only at Columbine, but the next event, which was 9/11.
And it continues with Uvalde, Oxford High School, on and on and on. All right. GuardSmart and Allied Universal Security came together in 2015. You were with them till 2018. Talk about that chapter.
Yeah, that was kind of, you know, you talk about having, you know, that kind of private company, family-driven, kind of quality assurance kind of drive in a company that became one of the major players. And we're surrounded by larger corporations. So, you know, we kind of had this feeling that in an industry that's known for the race to the bottom, hey, Ford Motor Company is putting a contract out. Let's all bid as low as we can to win this huge contract. We approached it in a different way. You know, we were like, here's our program. This is what it's going to take for us to manage your uniform security. This is how we're going to manage it, and this is our cost with it. And we went to market saying, if any of those don't jive with your philosophy, then we probably wouldn't be good partners. And I kind of prided ourselves in the way that we approached the market. What we needed at the time was better technology. You know, like a lot of companies that kind of had that kind of founder, you know, staying on through many years, we didn't really adapt to technology real well. So the initial coming together of the two companies, and it was Universal at the time, you know, coming to us saying, we can be a much bigger and more technology-driven GuardSmart. And that was extremely, you know, appealing because, you know, a lot of people said, you know, IRA would never, you know, sell GuardSmart. But here you had a guy like Steve Jones who, at his heart as a salesman, you know, coming and saying, we can make you better. And so we were pretty excited at the time because it was a nice time for IRA to exit and for us to go on and build something that was going to be bigger, but along the same kind of mindset that we had.
It's the Fram oil filter concept. You can pay me now, or you can pay me later, but you're going to pay.
Yeah. We had an advisor at GuardSmart who said, pay somebody else less now and pay me more later.
All right, 2018, Daniel Young starts Circadian Risk. Tell us about Circadian Risk.
Yeah, so Daniel actually founded the original concept in about 2016, and it was just him and a development team. And he had a proof of concept with the Department of Veteran Affairs. And he went out, and Dan had actually worked for me with GuardSmart. And Dan had kind of the same kind of security and technology bent. And we had Dan going out and doing these risk assessments. And he was saying there's got to be a better way to do this. So Dan started developing a technology to collect risk data digitally. And that's what he started with the original proof of concept with Circadian. He actually had a small company prior to it. But he went out to the Department of Veteran Affairs as kind of the proof of concept. And so once he had gone through that and 2018 came along, he came calling and saying, hey, you know, I kind of felt we had something special at GuardSmart where we kind of changed an industry. You know, we weren't the race to the bottom. We were this kind of elite tier quality provider within the industry. He said, I'm trying to do the same thing, not from a security standpoint, but from a risk standpoint and providing a quality product by utilizing and leveraging technology. And he goes, it's a chance to disrupt an industry, you know, because he goes, you know how assessments have been done for 150 years. I've got something that's really good here. And so kind of sat with him and with, you know, had some talks over it. And it really kind of, you know, that's kind of what drove me, you know, to go in that direction. We were building a huge, huge company at Allied Universal at the time, which now it had been Allied Universal. And we were up to like $17 billion at the time. And I was like, you know, it's just not as fulfilling as when I was kind of, like I said, in that disruptor role. And so this was a chance to go and disrupt another industry. And so I had actually approached Steve Jones about it and said, this is what I want to do. I said, I can make this a win-win-win. You know, there was a customer that was looking at having more of my time from an Allied Universal standpoint. Allied Universal was going through another huge merger at the time. And I had this other opportunity. And I said, what do we need to do to make it happen so that I could do this? So we actually, together, Steve Jones and I, created a two-year exit plan for me, of which I could do both kind of part-time and then be ready and free and clear to go and be full-time as CEO at Circadian Risk.
We're talking to Michael Martin. Michael, why should a manufacturing company, an IT company, a bank, a school, whatever, consider using Circadian Risk?
I think what we're offering those companies, and just talking to a pharmaceutical company on right before this weekend started, and they came and said, you know, we see this as a game changer. You know, it's the way that we're delivering the risk information to them. We want companies to be able to look at this data in a new way and constantly look at it and say, how can I make my organization safer from the dynamic threats and emerging threats that are out there? And so what Circadian offers is a way to look at your risk on a daily basis. That's where the name Circadian actually comes from, you know, that biological process that resets every 24 hours. We're saying risk is the same way. Your risk this morning may be totally different than when you went to bed last night. So that because of that ever-changing dynamic and capturing the data the way we do, we're allowing people to see this data in real time and adjust to it. So the reason why companies should come and look at it is because we're giving them a better way to look at risk, manage the risk, and again, the ultimate goal, make their organization safer.
We're talking to Michael Martin. And sometimes the old way is the best way. When mom and dad used to say we're too poor to buy cheap, or an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Certain things never change. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
Jack Rasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.
Anything is possible.
I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Michael Martin, CEO and founder of Circadian Risk, Inc. There's a listener tonight, and he says, with all due respect, you're very knowledgeable, but Michael, you don't understand our industry and how we analyze risk. We're unique.
And I can say that I've never heard that before. Of course, I'm being facetious. That's the most common thing that we had. Now, if I go back to my GuardsMark days, we approached it very much in the traditional sense of conducting assessments. We would go out and we would come in, and the assessors were generally generalist, right? Because they were doing, you know, we did the NFL, we did manufacturing, we did, high-rise office buildings. So they were kind of generalists. They were not, you know, specific SMEs in any type of area. We had one guy that had particular expertise in pharmaceutical. But when you put that person in, could they do an assessment at a manufacturing plant? Yes. Did they know the culture fully of either the organization or the industry? No, they couldn't be expected to learn that. And they were right. The customers were right when they said, you don't understand how my company views risk, or you don't understand how my industry views risk. And the way we solved for that at Circadian was, again, by leveraging the technology. we go back and we put the framework in place and we go to the organization and say, you're right, we don't understand. That's why we've created a product that you can adjust the risk tolerances to your organizational tolerance. And you can customize to what is unique to the pharmaceutical industry that isn't in the regular heavy manufacturing industry. And the same thing for heavy manufacturing. What are those things that you need to protect against that are unique to your organization or your company? Because the company may have, you know, the CEO says that we are not going to put magnetometers in our lobby because we don't want that kind of a look. Okay, there are other options for you to consider for that. And that is completely up to you. And that's why we don't say there's a one-size-fits-all to anything. You know, there are different options that we can give you for consideration to design the security program that you want to design and do it within your tolerances.
We're talking to Michael Martin. If you want to learn more, www.circadianrisk.com. All right, you focus on the physical security plan. But there's a lot of commonalities between the cyber and the physical.
Yep.
What couple of guidelines can you give our listeners to minimize problems?
Yeah, and I think when we came in, when we were originally designing Circadian Risk, because we came from such a physical background, we kind of said, okay, there's a lot of cyber products out there, so let's focus on the physical because nobody's focusing on that. But what we came to realize in dealing with different partners on the cyber side is there's a lot of commonalities, as you said. One is the perpetrator is looking for what they look for, right? They're looking for an easy target, and they're looking for an easy score, right? And that's why you've got the ransomware attacks out there. But the other thing that's probably more unique is people think, and I think we talked about this in the thing, there's, you know, a hacker in Budapest that's getting into my, you know, into my thing. But it really goes... you know, what's known as social engineering attacks is how these cyber attacks really start. There are people looking at calling an organization saying, hey, I'm with Federal Express and I need to deliver a package, but I was stopped at the gate. Is there some way you can get me in? Is there a dock that I can go to that I don't have to go through your main gate? And they try these different tactics, and they look on social media, and they look at who works at these organizations and how they can expose them. So it's really they take advantage of the most delicate thing we have out there, right? The human error, right? The most common problem that we have. And it's you know, you take that kind of modern problem and you put these traditional things in place. You know, hey, you know, verify everybody who's calling you. Make sure you don't let people piggyback in. One of the, you know, Dan Young, the founder, and I laughed about when we were talking with a client about social engineering or about how they try to get in. They bring donuts, you know, and say, I'm here for so-and-so, you know, and he goes, you'll be surprised at how many places you can get through. It's kind of getting that mentality and understanding, though, although it's a cyber attack, you know, how are they getting in and how are they getting the information?
We're talking to Michael Martin, who spent 30 years of his life focused on the security management industry. Michael, what's the two or three biggest changes in the industry in these 30 years?
I think first and foremost, I mentioned a couple times now that the industry had kind of this rent-a-cop mentality, that you didn't go contract security, that you did your own proprietary security if you wanted contract and if you wanted security, and you went contract if you just wanted to fill a requirement. And over the years, what's changed is that core business mentality. You know, what is our core business? So for a company like, you know, automotive company, they're going to say, if you're not putting a part on this car or designing it and helping it get out the door, that's what's essential to us. So anything like catering, security, landscaping, maintenance, all these things, you know, say there's other companies that focus on those. And that mindset kind of changed. And that's why I think we grew so much during that time, because we were providing not an alternative to contract, but an alternative to proprietary operators out there. Whereas today, I think it's common to say, okay, I accept that it's going to be contract security here.
For the last 21 years, we've all experienced something called TSA. How will it change by 2025?
Yeah, I think, and I'm chuckling a bit because I do have a story about that. But you know, I think the technology, which is the other change, you know, there was the acceptance of that contract can be as good as proprietary. That's one. The other is that technology is increasing and getting better. And everybody remembers that, you know, this first, you know, in transition to TSA, you know, there's a laborious thing. You had to take your shoes off. You had to take your belt off. But the technology is getting better, and that's going to continue to improve. And so you're going to have things, you know, right now you have, if you're willing to give your information over, you can do clear. You know, I walk in, I have them scan my retina, and I go through a line, and I'm through the airport security line in less than 5 minutes. And then they have the TSA pre-check. If you give them a little less information, you can go through there. And then if you don't want, you know, there are other lines. But the motivator is, right, that line moves pretty fast, so what do I need to do to go in there? And the technology is getting better because they're using the lighter screening on those, and I say lighter screening, but the easier screening on those passengers and testing out the equipment on them. That's eventually going to filter to everybody.
We're talking to Michael Martin, the CEO and founder of Circadian Risk. What's next for Circadian Risk?
So we're doing a lot of exciting things right now. We've kind of hit that inflection point where we're adding a lot of enterprise customers, and we're looking at, okay, how do we make what's revolutionary even better? And so we're looking at, you know, can we automate that inherent risk process to look at what's going on throughout, you know, whether it be social media, the dark web, the, you know, deep sources, to go in and tell organizations how the risk is changing and what risks are out there. And that's only one part of the puzzle, and there's companies that are already focusing on that. We want to take their data in and be able to say, when you get up, you know, and you fire up that circadian risk portal, you know, what has changed in my risk environment and what threats do I need to be prepared for right now? And what we're doing is we're looking and taking that information and saying, okay, now how well prepared are you about those? And so it's going to be a lot more automation on what the threats are and what the emerging threats are out there, getting fed into our information and then helping people solve for those types of risks out there.
Michael, thank you for 30 years of protecting us and keeping us safer. Keep up the great, great work.
No, and thank you for the opportunity. And, you know, again, I think we both love this city of ours, and I can't wait to see these teams all rebound one day.
Amen. Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Brasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spawn.